woke up this morning with the sundown shining in him.
Where's the money, Lebowski? Where's the f***ing money, head?
Oh, it's, it's down there somewhere. Let me take another look.
I found my mind in a brown paper bag, but then...
106 miles to Chicago. We got a full tank of gas, half a pack of cigarettes. It's dark, and we're wearing sunglasses.
Hit it.
I tripped on a cloud and fell 8 miles high. I tore my mind on a jagged sky.
Okay, you know, you guys aren't privy to all the new so, you know... that's what you pay me for.
I just dropped in to see what condition my condition was in.
Illinois Nazis. I hate Illinois Nazis.
Yeah, let's cut through the chase, okay? What are you guys selling?
I lost you $60,000. There is no one who wants to make that money back for you more than I do.
There's just one thing, dude.
What's that?
You have to use so many cuss words.
What the f*** are you talking about?
Don't worry, nobody's listening anyway.
I woke up this morning with the sundown shining in him. I found my...
Well, okay, it's Tyson Jacks. So tonight is Mr. Matt Weber aboard. Mr. Jack Silverman's helping him out over there. S&P futures up $2. Dow futures up 14. NASDAQ futures up 11. A little bit of a pause yesterday in the rally. We were down some based on Trump's "I could put more tariffs out there if I want to" comments. Which, you know, kind of getting old, I think. The constant use of the I word is starting to bug me a little bit, but that's, you know, that's just the way that is. Kevin, how are you?
What's the I word? I'm doing fine.
I could put tariffs out there if I want to. I can do this. I mean, it's, should be like a we or something when you're president, I think, sometime, but it's just me. Style's different. Here's a headline. House rebuke of Trump for racism unites Democrats, energizes GOP. I don't know exactly what to
say. That whole thing is just so incredibly stupid anyway. I mean, that, you know, not that they're wrong, but what hypocrites. You know, when they had the anti-Semitic remarks by one of their own, the Democrats couldn't manage to come up with anything except, you know, three rounds of negotiations before they decided to lock in on "we're against hate," now they're all over it. And you know what a bunch of friggin' hypocrites wasting all of our time on stupid stuff.
Well, it's all question.
And the, you know, the president's right there with him. I'm not condoning him. I'm just saying, you know, this is just,
well, just as I would not
condone. What an annoying use of Congress's time.
I would say that. I don't know why they shouldn't have to deal with it though. I can remember, you know, all the racist stuff when I was growing up. It was, what was the worst one? Oh, the worst one, we don't have enough money to send all the black people all the way back, so why don't we send them all halfway back, you know, or something. I mean,
that one. Who said that?
I don't know. Some loser from the South Side when I was like 10 years old. I mean, you know, whatever. There's been losers everywhere. The trick is to not, you know, there was a Star Trek episode, and, you know, Captain Kirk was saying something about, he was up against like some, or race that had evolved past our petty crap. And the guy says, "You still have, you know, you still have the instincts in you to kill and to, you know, whatever." I'll rattle it off a list of stuff, and Kirk says, "Yeah, we're making improvements." He goes, "I might have those instincts to do those things." He says, "But I know I'm not going to do them today. You know, tomorrow I'm not going to do them tomorrow, and we're making progress." I mean, I know that all kinds of people are incredibly. Maybe there's even an instinct in anybody that when somebody is different than you, you somehow just recoil a little bit, and then you have to say to yourself, what are you doing that for? And I remember I was in Germany, Dr. J and I were doing some lecturing over there, and of course back when I looked halfway decent, all the ladies from the bank took us out to the street fest.
I'm sorry, I've known you for 40 some odd years. When was that?
It was a little while. It was a brief window. Anyway, so well, we got invited. Let's just put it that way. So we're going out to Street Fest. And of course, the Street Fest in Frankfurt is nothing like a Street Fest here. Incredibly nice chairs. You know, they had the concrete, what do you call the pavement that's all the cobblestone kind of thing with the concrete before we even figured out how to do that here. Or maybe it was cobblestone, I don't know. And of course, you don't get, no self-respecting German would sell you beer in a glass, or a paper cup. You had real glasses, real steins.
I was going to say, if nothing else, the beer was better. But.
Oh, but you also, you have to have the right glass. You can't, there's no way you're drinking a good beer out of a paper cup in Germany. So, and I'm looking around going, God, there's not a black person here. There's not an Asian person here. And all of a sudden, these two gypsies kind of walk by, and everybody kind of looks at them. And you almost get in the same mindset that, wow, who are those people that are, like, different? What are they doing here? I mean, then I sit there and go, I don't know, they must be gypsies or something. I'm sure they're fine. But you do get that feeling, you know, that when something or someone is different. But you have to keep telling yourself, what's the difference? To them, I look different, and I hope they accept me. Your brain has to at some point kick in here, Kevin, and that's what education's all about. That's what good parenting's all about. That's what a lot of things are all about. Just because somebody's different doesn't make them bad or worse. You know, they might be better, but they can still friends, whatever. It shouldn't make any difference over time. I mean, and we learn that as we grow older. But still, a lot of people have this weird prejudice. There's a lot of white people who think the reason why they didn't go to Harvard is because some black guy got their spot for them. And there's some black guy who thinks he didn't go to Harvard because all the white guys go to Harvard. I mean, if you want to fall into that abyss, you can do that. But the trick is to not do that, right? And the last thing we need is anybody of any spot, whether it's a Democratic senator or whether representative, talking about Jewish people or the last thing we need is that from somebody who somewhat is supposed to be in authority. I mean, you don't teach your kids to use the bathroom, and when you go to school, you see the president of school peeing off the balcony. I mean, you would hope that these people would sort of help you out as you're educating people and not be the other way. I don't know that it's a killer politically or it's a killer country-wise. It's just not right, I think.
Yeah, I'm with you. I got no problem with that. So, yeah, that's what I said. The whole thing is wrong, and I'm not defending any of it. I'm just in awe of the hypocrisy. And, we can cut that a lot of different directions, too. So that isn't just a left or just a right thing. It was a senator from Tennessee for a term. The actor,
I really liked him. He was in Hunt for Red October.
Fred Thompson.
Yeah. Fred Thompson said
that being in Washington for 6 years made him long for the honesty and sincerity of Hollywood.
I would say that if poor guy didn't get cancer, he might be president today, and I would have voted for him. I really liked him. He's still around. Is he still around or not?
Yeah, I'm pretty sure he is.
Maybe he went. I know he had the cancer. Why he left the Senate? He had cancer, right?
I think he just laughed. I think he genuinely did miss the sincerity of Hollywood by comparison.
Well, he was going to run for president one of the years, and he didn't. He didn't run.
Yeah, he did. He did, and that that was always the question with him was, does he really want to do it, or is he kind of being pushed into doing it? And so, it's the old fire in the belly argument.
Yeah.
Did he really have it? And he never did campaign that hard. He did have a candidacy. He did enter some primaries, but he never really did campaign.
I think there was a health issue there too, but I could be wrong. Whatever. I mean, people, get up there, people do get health issues. I mean, at every age, really, not just that. But yeah, we're starting to see some of these numbers come out and you have people that are kind of cheering. I just wonder, Kevin, the people that are cheering the Chinese economy demise and the third world country demise, some of the economies are shrinking over there. I don't think people realize how dependent we are, and some of our people here are in those places. I mean,
and you may encounter people cheering for it. I don't. Maybe we have I don't know what the president said. I got to tell you, I don't understand the people who follow his every tweet and so on. I think that would drive me crazy, and it would have, frankly, it would have driven me crazy following President Obama's every tweet too. So you can imagine how it would be with President Trump. But that said, he may be thinking it's a good thing just as a to get him back to the negotiating table. I don't know. So if he's touting it, I'm sure it's because he feels like it's giving him a stronger negotiating.
Well, I was actually out to dinner last night with a brilliant economist, and he's a very serious he's a very serious Republican, conservative, and to that end,
is there any other kind?
He can't stand anything Democratic. And the scary part with him, and I wasn't going to belabor the point, but nothing's going to drive me the other way. So whatever the man says, I don't care, and I don't want to listen. And I think there is a point where you do have to listen. I mean, to see what your guy is doing and telling other people, just because. You're right. There's people that are very close to me that have the exact same attitude. And you say you don't listen to every tweet. I know you don't, but you're pretty up on what's going on. But I have a couple people that last week I said, what do you think of all these kind of racist comments? What racist comments? I don't pay attention to any of that stuff. It's all coming from the bad press and stuff. And I'm going, no, this is a tweet from the guy. there's some middle ground here where you can't be watching all this crap all day long, because I don't. But you also can't be ignoring it either. I don't know where that spot is, you know what I'm saying? But I'm more further over the line because after the show and in a case it might affect the market, which it really hasn't. Yesterday, the only thing that Trump says that affects the markets usually have to do with him thinking he can do more tariffs. And if we actually go forward with all this stuff in Europe, I think conceptually could be almost worse than China in a lot of ways, because we're tied at the hip. Because now we're running this, we're in this circle here, Kevin. I don't know if you saw today that the big house, I mean, one of the big house, the White House, it's Donald Trump versus Jay Powell. New battle lines are being drawn, and now it has nothing to do with interest
rates.
Somebody's
right and somebody's wrong.
Well, but I'm saying,
somebody's
right. Who was that?
It's Crosby, Stills, Nash.
That's right.
It's Crosby, Stills, and Nash.
That's right. Seeing as I have the album, I should know that.
For what it's worth. 8 o'clock bumper music, Tom. Or 7 o'clock for you.
That was Buffalo Springfield.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah, sure enough it was. Some of the same people, though.
Oh, God, yeah.
Still singing.
Yep. Who was the one that was living down the block from Dr. J's cousin in Mill Valley for a few years, and he painted the windows black, and is that David Crosby or is that Nate Graham Nash?
Don't know.
One of those guys.
Go south side on it. Say the boat of them.
The boat of them. Yeah. I can do that. I don't know, I probably shouldn't be able to still, but my mother used to tell me, "What are you selling?"
You can take the boy out of the south side, but you can't take the south side out of the boy.
The weird part is my mother was very well spoken, way better than me. And she'd say once in a while, "You sound like you come from 33rd in the tracks. What's the matter with you?" I don't know if you've noticed this slight change in tenor in this battle. It's not about, I'm sure it still is a little bit about the stock market, but now he's blaming the Fed for the dollar being higher and that's what's causing. If you noticed, our trade deficits with all these places are worse than when Trump started yelling about it 3 years ago. And not every month, and not every place, but they're really not any better. And one of the reasons is the dollar's high. Another reason why the dollar's high, in a lot of ways, is because the interest rates here are higher than the rest of the world. So now we're saying our Fed, instead of worrying about the economy here and having the right rates for inflation and so forth here, we now have the Fed is on the competitive edge of the dollar versus other currencies around the world. And if Japan wants to run their currency currency basically down to the point where the interest rates are negative, we need to follow them because it's a competitive edge. And Kevin, I know where did I've ever heard about monetary policy is following somebody else's bad policy one of the things you're supposed to do. But in the short term, and we're talking about somebody who I think thinks very short term, you don't want the dollar that as high as it is. Okay, it's probably 5% too high, 10% too high, which is a real lot when you're trying to sell Cadillacs against Mercedes. You know, 10% is a lot of dough. So now, you know, but I don't know what you'd do about that. It's just bad policy. I think you got to hope that what's her name coming in ahead of to replace Draghi. What's the lady's name who's a World Bank? The French lady with the perpetual tan. What the hell's her name?
Yeah, don't know.
I'll think of it. But the everybody else probably knows. Somebody please tweet that in. Christine Lagarde.
Oh, okay.
I mean, I think the policy of having a 10-year rate, you know, minus 0.3% is about the dumbest thing I've ever heard in economics in my entire life. Yet they're there. I don't think it's solved any kind of problem for them whatsoever. Or to somehow make money for the people who were foolish enough to buy it even. I mean, you know, I don't know how you follow it. I don't even know that that's a non sequitur. You know, it's like the mother at the end of the block letting the 5-year-old stay out all night. Well, come on. You know, I mean, you sort of like to be even with the other kids a little bit, but you're not going to go down that road. To me, it's just as ignorant. So I don't know what Jay Powell does here, but now it's turned from, you know, stopping the economy growth here. It's really about the dollar at this point. And I think a lot of people are starting to realize that, but, you know, and he has a point. I just don't know how far you follow him. I really don't know, Kevin. What do you think?
You know what? I mean, that's Tom. I'm probably not the right person to comment on there. But as you said, you know, if the tactic is to chase after somebody else's bad policy, then I'm going to have to revise some of my the strategy sections of some of my courses. It's not anything I teach. And it sort of goes to the when Jerry Reinsdorf talked about arbitration and free agency, and he said, "Yeah, I have to match the moves of my stupidest competitors."
Well, and that's the truth. And it's not about. It happens more than you think, Kevin, and especially somebody who's from the real estate business. One of the competitors on the, a competitor, one of the contributors to the show, hasn't been on in a while, is Robin Spitali. Her husband in New Jersey, Alan, is one of the nicest men. He's a builder, and he's a structural engineer first. And his father, I don't know if he's still alive, but I think he might be. He's retired, designed really high-end homes. Built, two homes for Senator Lauderman, built, couple of homes for like the Tony Soprano kind of guys, where people got paid cash every day that were working there. But anyway, if somebody's going to do your house, you'd want Alan to do it because it'd be done perfectly. And he will tell you that he got out of the business really 10 years ago. He can't get a job. He says because if you look at the architecture specs, which he's spectacular at, and you price everything out to the penny, he can price something out to within 1% of the place. And nobody wants that. They'll say, no, this house is going to be $850,000. Well, this other guy says it's going to be $750,000. Well, it's not going to be because here's what I actually have to buy. And no, he says it's going to be $750,000. So sure enough, the guy makes a mistake, does something, whatever. The house ends up being $900,000. But that's what people want. It's incredibly bad policy, but that's what people want. There's people that have been in the business bidding for expressway work in this country, bridge work, everything in the world. You're supposed to know your landscape, do this. If you have any questions about soil tests, ask. And there's going to be somebody that's going to lowball a bridge, and you're going to say, what the hell? How can somebody build a bridge like that? And sure enough, oh, my God, the soil content. If you told me it was that, I never would have built there. Here's a change order. We need another $1 million. I mean, there's people that have done that forever. Kevin, I mean, and if you don't follow the bad policy, sometimes you don't ever get a job. So it's not like it's unique to this case. You know, I mean, it's not
You know, that may be the president's mindset, because his point of reference is that industry. That doesn't mean it's good. He's got to have some better angels in the administration that put the brakes on some of that stuff. But the world is not the commercial real estate development industry.
But it is extremely yoked together vis-a-vis currencies. And somebody else's bad policy does impact you. He's right about that. I mean, there's no doubt that he's not a dummy when it comes to that. Is it affecting us? And the answer is yes. Now the question is, if you go down a rat hole, and now you start having, you know, are people in America going to put up with going to the bank and, by the way, give me $1,000 at the beginning of the year, I'll send you back $9.99? I mean, I don't think so. You know, now people start taking their money out of the bank. Is that a problem?
Yeah, all you're doing at that point is renting vault space.
Yeah. And now what do you do? I mean, and then you're going to have the Larry Summers of the world saying, well, that's okay. Now we got to get rid of cash, because if people can pull their money out, I mean, there's got to be some connection in Europe between places like Sweden and those places not wanting anybody to have any cash, and the fact that these guys are dabbling around with negative interest rates. There's got to be a connection, right? You got to make the people with everybody with cash look like they're a drug smuggler, right?
That would seem to be, yes. The short answer is yes. I wonder if people have thought it through that clearly, but they may very well have.
Well, I mean, I would say, Kevin, if people who listen to this show, I mean, we had all kinds of different opinions, and you know, I'm surely not right all the time, and neither is anybody else, although we have some people that are right most of the time. Maybe not me. But one thing you can take, if you can put on the wall and say, one thing the chief says you should put on the wall is, everything you see, everything you hear and you see, it all pretty much all depends on everything else. And if you write it down, and maybe 2 weeks later you hear about something you think is totally different, and they're connected. They're absolutely connected. And I don't know if that theme ever gets across, but I mean, I don't know if you agree with me on that, but it does. Every one of these little policy things you see are all connected to something. And I don't know who the man behind the curtain is, but you can see them all kind of moving together sometimes, can't you? And you don't really know. On one hand, you say, nobody in government could possibly be that smart to make all this stuff all sort of happen at the same time. Yet when you see it happen like that, you wonder if the people you see are even the people running the place. Because there is some connection with all this stuff, right?
Yeah, that would probably be a fun exercise, is to just start logging things and then revisit in 2 weeks some of the impact of it. You know, say the next announcement and how it might be related. 2 weeks or a month or whatever. Maybe we can have a segment of the show and call it. I don't know.
Well, you almost wonder if there isn't.
Like that.
I mean, sometimes
you forget I told you so.
Yeah, sometimes you'll read, you see on the internet, and of course, you know, on the internet, God, what could be wrong on the internet? You'll see some story about the 10 most influential families in the country, and now they're still, they have their fingers into everything. And you talk about, you know, the people that run a couple of biggest banks, and maybe the Bushes when they were all still alive, you know, that type of thing. And you look into that and you say, you wonder if there isn't really a, you know, a man behind the curtain. I have to dig it out at home. I know I got it buried someplace. There was a, when Bush ran against Gore, they talked about, I remember the book these come out, the Making of a President. The first one was like 1960. Was it Theodore White? Theodore H. White? Someone else. And they would, and the deal was, you could put a reporter from start to finish in both campaigns. And the guy could observe everything, take notes, do everything, under the idea that he can't say boo till after the election. So, of course, in whatever year it was, Bush versus Gore, the election was, quote, over, but we didn't know who the president was, right? So, technically, it was after the election, and I think it was Newsweek, I have it, put out a big, I mean, we're talking about a 25-page, you know, with ads, section in the middle of Newsweek about both sides, and what they did wrong and what they did, whatever. It was absolutely fascinating. And, they were absolutely convinced that the Gore campaign was so disorganized that if he would have hired, Bill Daley to run the campaign, like even 2 weeks before he did hire him, that he'd have won. Because the thing was absolutely in chaos. And on the other side, they talked about the Republican establishment. And, you know, some of them might not even have been, but it was George Shultz, I think the guy from the Reagan administration. Wasn't he Secretary of Treasury and Secretary of State, I think, Shultz?
Yeah.
Well, they had this big meeting in Texas where, like, 10 to 12 of these really rich Republican, you know, some of them were neocons, but just guys with, it's probably the same people that go to the big picnic out in California that Reagan always used to go to. And they interviewed people. And they interviewed George Bush, and they said, well, you know, we like this guy. If we can figure out how to just put a line in the sand from before he was 40 when he was this playboy drug drinking guy. Not bad. I mean, but he was, till now he's the teetotaler and the family man and a whole bit. He's won two elections in Texas. He's a likable guy. By the way, he owned a baseball team, which makes him even more likable, even though he only owned like 1% of it. We're just going to run him. And they basically interviewed this group for the next president. And if you ever have a feeling that George always has a hand on his shoulder guiding him someplace, it doesn't surprise me, Kevin. I'm sure that same group didn't, like, leave him alone once he got in there. I'm sure they told him why they wanted him in there.
Oh, I'm sure they did. I'm sure they did. The one thing I will say about President Bush that I think came out pretty consistently is he did have a kind of ethical core that drove him. Whether you liked it or not doesn't, you know.
Oh, I actually really loved it. I'm not a Bush basher.
There was a principle to him that, and I don't know that anybody was going to push him out of that.
No, I you know what? I'm with you 100%. Talk about more about that after the break, because you can tell the difference between him and Clinton, sort of, in how he got there. In one man's opinion, let's put it that way. S&P futures, we still got a slow morning going on here. So S&P futures are still up 2, Dow futures up 14. Be right back, Stacks and Jacks.
How much confidence do you have that your investments will make you wealthy? Do you truly know the odds? Welcome to Luckbox, the control freak's guide to life, money, and probability. Luckbox shows you how to gauge the likelihood of success before you commit to an investment or any other decision. And Luckbox is free for 1 year at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Each new issue dives deep into the current investing climate, separates the signal from the noise with relevant trade ideas, and equips you with cutting-edge tactics you don't already know. Luckbox is the essential magazine for proactive investors who are hell-bent on pursuing life, luxury, and happiness through sports, fitness, travel, food, spirits, music, and a whole lot more. Smart investors don't bet on possibilities, they play the probabilities. Luckbox is $7.99 on newsstands, but you can subscribe for 10 free digital issues at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Don't rely on luck. Get Luckbox at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks.
Hello, this is Tom Howell, the Chief. Confused about investing these days? I suspect you are not alone. Investing was never easy, although at times it may have seemed so. I think one reason behind the current concern, although maybe not explained as such, is how the fluctuation in the American dollar and the associated politics is affecting your investments and your wealth. It may not be enough to make some money in your investments. You may need now to make enough to exceed the amount that your leadership is depreciating the value of the dollars you've worked your whole life to accumulate. That same leadership has seen fit to maneuver risk-free interest rates to near zero. Providing positive risk-averse returns in a zero-interest and declining real wealth environment is by far the toughest assignment I've ever had in my years as a money manager. I'm sure that a lot of you have heard that one way to possibly deal with this problem is to invest in so-called hard currencies like silver and gold, the idea being that they will retain their relative value in the face of devaluation of paper currencies like the dollar. To be honest, I have never been a gold bug. I've always had faith that having enough dollars and a good investment strategy was good enough. Now I'm not so sure. But I do know that if I did invest in gold or silver, I'd want to do it in the same manner as we do with PTI for investments in the market, with defined risk. If you feel the need to invest in gold or silver, we can do it using the same strategies that we use for our protected index program. No matter what you invest in, we feel that you need to know and control your risk. Find us at PTISecurities.com. That's PTISecurities.com.
Is your business being challenged by the complexities surrounding healthcare reform or other matters related to human resources management? If so, then Cognos HR can help. A longtime friend and contributor to the Stocks and Jocks radio program, Cognos HR provides its clients with a perfect blend of strategic consulting and day-to-day HR management to drive overall improvement in business performance. companies that join the Cognos HR family are better able to manage healthcare costs, enhance benefit offerings, and improve employee satisfaction by leveraging our access to Fortune 500 benefits. Our innovative onboarding and payroll technology, along with our constant attention to detail, enables us to provide the highest level of quality service to our clients. Now, your time and energy can be focused on generating business and increasing your bottom line. We'll take care of the rest. For more information, call us at 630-401-8810 or search us on the web at CognosHR.com. Cognos HR, innovation in human resources. Licensed in Illinois and Arizona.
Are you one of the millions of people who suffer with pain? Do you wake up in the morning with stiffness in the lower back or neck? Why are you using medication to cover up the symptoms without treating the actual cause? Painkillers, muscle relaxants, and anti-inflammatories are not the answer. At ChiroMed, physicians are trained to detect the cause of your symptoms and to correct the underlying problem. If you're ready to listen to common sense and do what it takes to make changes in your body that can affect your health for the rest of your life, give ChiroMed a call and set up a complimentary consultation. They are located in Orland Park and can be reached at 708-403-2727. 20,000 patients over 22 years have been treated at ChiroMed, and over 90% of them have had positive results without medication or expensive surgery. Isn't it time you did something good for your body too? Give ChiroMed a call. 708-403-2727. That's 708-403-2727. Let's get you pain-free and living again.
Stocks, jocks,
Stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right
now, right here, right now, right now. Well, everybody, Stocks and jocks. I'm Tom. Mr. Matt Weber on the board was his henchman with Mr. Jack Silverman. We also have a. Luckbox Magazine, the guide to money and probabilities, available on newsstands for $7.99 per issue. Stocks and Jocks listeners receive a free digital subscription at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. I'm starting to really like that magazine, just by the way. Plus, I really like Jeff, our guest on Tuesday. Really,
yeah, he's great.
And, yeah, I mean, it's. I think we're going to get probably more. We're trying to get somebody who wrote one of the articles on either the Paris trading or whatever on Friday. We'll let everybody know tomorrow if we do, because I'd love to talk about that. That'd be pretty cool. Anyway, S&P futures up a quarter. NASDAQ futures up 550, so not much going on there. Bank of America, which beat on earnings. These banks haven't moved very much. I've got the stock up 6 cents, 29.05, so pretty much flatlining. Dow up 14. Over in Europe, we've got the DAX down 12.1%. Again, these guys, July is their big month, July and August. They're much bigger on vacations over there than we are. FTSE down 14.2%, CAC around down 3%, call that flat. Over in Asia, we've got the Nikkei down 66.3%, Shanghai down 5%, that's 0.2%, Hang Seng down 26%, let's call that flat. Oil up 36 cents, 57.98. We were pushing 60 a few days ago, and we're well below that, even though we're up this morning. I guess this might be as they said in the trading floor, a dead cat bounce. Brent up 62 cents, 64.97. Arbob back down to 190. It was 198 maybe a week ago. Gold down $7, 1403, still staying at over 1400. Silver down a penny, 1566. Silver, I'd say, has caught up to gold here in the last few weeks. They've been lagging, but now it has caught up. Bonds, we've got the 10-year 2.09. It was 2.12. So it's come back a little bit. Again, the Bund, which we've been talking about earlier, which is the 10-year rate on the German or Euro dollar, is minus 0.28. In Japan is Japan 10-year is minus 0.11. So again, those that's beyond my comprehension. How they could be like that, but they are. Matty, what do you got for us? Trevi Weather Sports.
36 minutes past the hour. Good morning to everyone out there. Off to a pretty good start on the area expressways, roadways, and tollways. No issues on the Edens. Kennedy looks good. Traffic building on the Eisenhower and Stevenson, but no accidents to report. Southside expressways, Dan Ryan, I-57, Bishop Ford, looking good. Suburban tollways are looking good, too. Off the expressways, we do have a few issues. Central Avenue, just north of 26th Street between the Eisenhower and Harrison, is closed due to an accident investigation. Apparently, there was a fatal hit and run overnight last night, and that investigation is going to continue throughout the morning. CTA is rerouting the number 12 Roosevelt buses out there on the west side, so keep that in mind. On the north side, we have malfunctioning traffic lights at Western and Diversey in Elston, that six-way stop, which is a pretty busy intersection.
Well, that's got to be fun.
So that's not going to be good. Hopefully they can get that fixed before the morning rush really goes into effect. Other than that, we have one other issue of note. It's out in the Western Burbs. County Farm Road between Windmill Drive and Schick Road is closed due to an accident. Weather today, it's going to be a really nice day before we heat back up tomorrow. Partly cloudy skies today, a high of 83 degrees. Right now it's mostly clear and 76 degrees downtown. But again, the heat wave is coming back beginning tomorrow and then really going into effect on Friday and Saturday as we could hit triple digits for the first time since 2012 in the city. For our Phoenix listeners, sunny with a high of 108 today. Right now it's clear and 91. In sports, Cubs rallied back, down 3-0 after the first. They shut the Reds down for 9 straight innings and scored just enough, followed by a Kyle Schwarber walk-off home run in the bottom of the 10th to beat the Reds 4-3. White Sox were blown out in Kansas City, losing to the Royals 11-0, but the bigger news was Eloy Jimenez was hurt his right elbow and was flown back to Chicago. He's expected to be placed on the injured list, and he'll be reevaluated to see how serious that injury is. Lastly, Diamondbacks took care of the Rangers 9-2. Chief.
We have any idea what's wrong with Contreras yet?
They say it's a foot strain, and he's on the injured list, so he's being evaluated, but I don't know the extent of it. But the fact that they traded for Maldonado last night, or yesterday, 2 days ago, leads me to believe that it could be serious, which sucks because he's been the best player on the team and he's been the best catcher in baseball and one of the best players in baseball. And so hopefully he's not out for an extended period of time. The good news is that Caratini's become a pretty good player. And if Maldonado's kind of the defensive guy and then Caratini plays 4 or 5 days a week, I mean, they're definitely going to miss Contreras, but hopefully they can ride the ship.
Well, plus if he comes back, he can hit and play somewhere else for a while because he can play other positions a little less. Depending on what's wrong with his foot, catching might be a little strain.
Right, yeah. Although playing in the outfield wouldn't be that easy either, I imagine.
Well, it is if they don't hit it to you.
That's true.
But still, you're not like you're in a squat with getting hit by a ball. I mean, you're in the action back there. I have to believe anything on your body that hurts, the ball will find it.
Yes, yes. Bob Brenly used to always say that. If anything's sore, the ball will find it when you're behind the plate.
Oh, God, it's just... So, Kevin, I was trying to... Not so much the... You know, to talk so much personalities on people, but I'm just talking about, everything's connected. It's sort of my theme here a little bit. When Bush, according to this reporter anyway, and I'll bring this thing in one of these days, actually read from it, and quote the guy, which I should be doing, basically said that they put him, they raised $30 million for him, which at that time, now $30 million for a campaign is what they would say in the South Side, chomp change, right? But it wasn't back then. So he goes up to New Hampshire and basically gets his ass kicked by McCain. And for whatever reason, McCain never was a favorite of the real Republican establishment, the down and dirty, you know, the Cheney, Rumsfeld, that whole group, the old neocon guys. He was never a fan of those. They never liked him. I don't know why, but there was never any love lost. I mean, I don't know if you probably agree with that, but so somewhere...
I actually think it was that it was all personality. And, it
could very well have been.
You know, McCain didn't hesitate to annoy people.
I don't disagree. And so the next week was... Remember when they used to have the Super Tuesdays? The internet had sort of just... I won't say come out, but it was just becoming used a real lot. They attacked McCain. The people behind... They came up with the $30 million bucks. We're not losing our $30 million that quick. That's when all that stuff came out about McCain's wife cheating on him when he was in Vietnam and him getting information to North Vietnamese, and that's why they let him out. All that stuff happened. So Bush clobbers him down in South Carolina, or whatever Big Tuesday was. It was South Carolina, North Carolina, and how many states were involved in that? I don't even remember. But so that's why McCain wouldn't even shake his hand at the convention. Now, on the other side of the coin, what Bush really did feel and did owe these guys, right? Now, but you're right. Bush had enough moral compass, I really believe that, certainly from his mom and his dad, that they weren't going to talk him into doing anything he thought was immoral. So, but he still owed people. Now, the other side, the flip side, they weren't running against each other, is Bill Clinton. Bill Clinton comes in. He's a good looking, very suave, ladies like him, got the blue eyes, got the whole thing going. And he gives a big speech at the convention. And then all of a sudden he's this up and comer, young guy from Arkansas that, you know, went to Oxford, did all this stuff. Comes in, he basically steals the nomination because nobody else wants it. Because Bush 1 is going to win in a landslide, and only somebody is going to take this nomination to essentially practice run for next time. And he really doesn't know anybody. I mean, other than the people who sent him money in, who he doesn't think he owes. It's not like a group of 10 guys gave him $30 million. So he runs on his own, and guess what? As president, he didn't give a crap about anybody in terms of not owing a soul. He ditches the people on the far left who did give him some dough, but not as formally as the people who had given Bush money. And when you look at the difference in behavior patterns, you can see why they're different. They came from two totally different spots.
Yeah, he's famous for the triangulation strategy. And so, which was to just, you know, pit all sides against each other. And anytime you can get two out of three, it works.
But it's nowhere near the same as walking into a room with 12 sober old dudes anointing you for the job and giving you $30 million. Even Clinton, with his bizarre personality, would have said, I owe these guys something, right? But he didn't have that to worry about.
Yeah, and that's what I'm saying. So, yeah, he wasn't beholden to anybody, so he was perfectly willing to play one against the next.
Absolutely.
Anytime it made sense for him.
And that's why I think Clinton absolutely befuddled and just pissed off the entire, I'll say, money establishment in this country, because he didn't owe him anything. And that, I mean, they couldn't wait to get that
until after he was out of office.
Yeah. Oh, no, not, money for himself was fine. But I'm saying they didn't control him. Now, the question is, who are the theys, and who do they control, and how much to varying degrees do they control all these people?
If you want to see, I mean, heck, you know, it's public record, even though it had to be amended about 15 times, but if you want to see, you know, who the money behind it was, when everybody thought Hillary was inevitable for the second time, who was donating to the Clinton Foundation in big money? And, I think that gives you a pretty good idea of some of the who.
Well, there are, I'm trying to split the fat guy who's dancing on the head of pin in half here, Kevin, which is hard to do. There's always going to be firms, say PTI, for instance, one of these years, you know, where we buy another firm, then we buy another firm, and then all of a sudden everybody really loves us on a national level. They flip me money billions a day. I don't even know what the hell to do with it. All this stuff happens, and 10 years from now, you know, we're not going to be Goldman Sachs, but we're somebody. You know, we're Schwab or something like that. We're not going to be Schwab, but because we're not in that business. But all of a sudden we're huge for some reason. The big guy upstairs gave us his account or something. Who the hell knows? But we're not in that group. We're going to be in the group where maybe we'll have you as our consultant. We're going to try and figure out who's going to win, and we're going to make sure that person got a check. We mean, to a certain extent, our desire is to have less people running, right? I mean, when the Ram father ran basically unopposed, it was one check. Last time, how many checks did we have had to write with nine people running? There could have been five people at one. We got to send them all a check because we want to be in bed with all of them, because that's the way our ridiculous politics in some ways works.
Yeah, we want everybody to be beholden so that we can figure out who wins. You know, another way to look at it is, if you were to look at Tom Steyer, and between his personal money and his PAC, I believe that he was the largest political donor in, of everybody, left or right. Now, one of the concerns that some of the Democrats have about him running for office is that now his money's not going to go their way. It's going to go into his own campaign. And how nuts do you have to be, by the way, to look at the field of 20 and say what this field needs is one more person?
Oh, God, yeah. I mean, I can't even. Whatever happened to the guy from Starbucks? Is he still running?
If he's going to do anything, it's going to be as a third party after all the rest is settled.
I don't envision
him, getting into any party race.
No, I'm saying I wouldn't mind a third party person. Just saying. By the way, we didn't talk about.
I'm all in on it. That's fine with me.
The The Russ Perot just died, speaking of which.
Yep.
Is today, another thing, is it today or tomorrow? It's the anniversary of the moon landing.
I'm not sure which day it is. I do know that today is National Hot Dog Day, but
well, it was two days ago the thing took off, right? Was it the anniversary, 50th anniversary of the liftoff?
Yeah, so wasn't it a 3-day trip?
I think it might have been. So it must be tomorrow. I mean, how many people? I mean, that was such an amazing thing. I still remember it, you know, obviously to this day. I mean, it was really something. And
oh, yeah. You know, everybody, our family, every family, you know, was just in front of the TV for hours waiting, you know, as it landed, waiting for him to come out, you know, all of those things. And you didn't dare.
No.
You didn't dare move because you sure as heck couldn't record that stuff. You know, a DVR to watch it again.
No, that was something you want to watch for sure live. But yeah, I mean, you know, but you do wonder, Kevin, if when the political, I mean, when people talk about this person gave money to Hillary, they gave money to Hillary because they thought she was going to win. Nobody, you don't have to like somebody to give money because they're going to win. That's why you give them dough, right? I mean, you can't be the one contractor that depends on city business, or you can't be somebody who does a lot of government business or is currying favor from anybody and not have a check there, because they won't even take your call. I mean, it's unfortunate.
Or at least you're given money because, in her case, because you think she can win. I think in her case, most people who were donating thought she would win. Because most people thought she would.
Well, she came pretty close. Let's put it that way. I'm not going to get into that.
I mean, you may support an ideology, and therefore you donate to it. But that's Steyer as an example, because he supports, you know, has historically supported so many candidates. But that's I'm not doubting that there's an ideology behind the donations. It's just that. Nobody wants to send the money down a rat hole, so they're not going to give it to somebody who has no chance of winning.
Well, the one interesting, I always thought the guy who had one of the most useful PACs, to him anyway, was Dan Rostenkowski. He was one of the first. He was a Speaker of the House for a long time, and he was from Chicago, and Danny was a guy that had one of the. He ran on a post for how many years, Kevin? So people would donate money to him. He didn't need it. So he put it in his personal pack, he put it in his pack. And if there was a Democrat running in, you know, South Dakota that was a little bit behind a Republican, then he'd call the guy up and say, hey, what do you need? need $1,000. Here you go. By the way, you owe me one, basically. You know, and I didn't owe him every vote or anything like that, but when you really needed him, you're at least going to consider Danny's point of view. And oh, by the way, if Danny also was very good with those guys. I mean, one of the guys was telling me when I went to one of those CBOE things. Matter of fact, Danny was still in office when I was on the board. And this guy from Reading, Pennsylvania, he's a Democrat. And he says, I go, what committee is he on? And he goes, well, that's an interesting question, because normally I'm on the two freshman committees, armed services, you know, not the double secret one that what's her name's on from California, where they tell you about all the covert
Feinstein.
Yeah, the covert operations, and not that one. The one where you just do how many tanks you guys want and that kind of thing. We work on military budgets. That's one of the entry level committees, and the other one is one of the agriculture committees. In that particular year, the guy goes, you know, this really sucks. He goes, it was the one we were debating, the don't ask, don't tell. And he goes, and my district is so violently anti-gay. He goes, that's not good. And the other one was this was the first, the year that the Missouri and Mississippi went over its banks in like 1992, and you couldn't even tell where the two came together. It was all messed up. Even worse than a few years ago. And he says, and some guy from Vermont, that there's evidently there's a Missouri River in Vermont or New Hampshire or something. The guy wants money for his Missouri River tour. We can't get his vote. He goes, I never thought we'd run this. Anyway, he was saying that what Danny says to him, hey, look, I know what your district's all about. He says, when the thing comes to the floor, you vote for the don't ask, don't tell to come to the floor. And when the vote actually comes up, vote against it. because it'll help you at home, and I don't need it. So he says, I didn't have to. I voted against it, even though I would have voted for it. And Danny says, don't go out on a limb on this one. Go out on a limb on the next one when I need you, because we don't need you for this one. Now, so there's a lot going on out there that people... And that's one time I was there one afternoon, and I learned all that in 20 minutes, Kevin. So can you imagine if you actually spent time out there and actually talked to me?
Oh, yeah. Waiting. You need your swamp waiters.
But you have to admit, I am a little unusual, and I will get in a conversation with somebody way faster than most people. But because I actually am curious, and I actually like people. So it's not like it's a bad thing. I mean, but yeah, he was saying it's, nicest guy, Kevin. And then I ran into another guy, Howard Coble, wanted me to get him Cub tickets when he came to Chicago. I go, you're a representative. Don't you have Cubs? You should be able to get them faster than me. I don't know anybody out there.
You get them and invite me.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. But, it's an odd world. You just wonder, with all the political crap, if it's 90%, if there really is a group behind the curtain that's controlling. I mean when you talk about the money in these major banks, I mean, there's no doubt that the Fed is there for the big banks. I mean, the first job is to save the banks. And I was talking to a couple of Fed people the other night, and I go, aren't you guys worried about, I don't know if you were listening yesterday when, I forgot the guy's name we had on, to replace Joel, for the day, and he was talking about all the people that borrow for small businesses in Detroit now are borrowing through LendingTree and these other places. So I asked my Fed guy, I go, what do you guys want that for? It's just competition. Let me get this straight. The banks, you're giving them a line of credit with the population for $250,000. You're giving them a get out of jail free card on the first $250,000 they attract. You're saying these people can't compete with online people? You got the wrong bank. You should have such an amazing advantage, Kevin. You should never lose out to an online guy. If you're able to have FDIC insurance? I mean, how could you not? I mean, and the idea that the Fed doesn't seem to care if the lion's share of the loans leave the banking system. Why is it that I'm so worried about that and they aren't?
Don't know what to tell you. I don't know how much I care as long as the borrower knows what he's getting into.
Well, yeah, but I'm saying you're giving people that's the whole job though. You would like the borrowing should be competitive. Coming out of the place where people have their savings. A third party shouldn't be able to compete with that, especially if they have FDIC insurance. If they are, it just means that somehow you're making these banks so fat some other way that they don't even have to work anymore.
Okay, yeah. I get it. Hey, real quickly, I want to shift gears because we're getting short on time. And you and Dr. Johnson on Monday talked some about education and alternative educations to the standard college or liberal education and preparing people for careers for in-demand jobs. And as you know, because I sent your stuff yesterday.
Yes, by the way, I read it.
Send out for the listeners a series of tweets for some of the stuff that's happening around the country. That is addressing that very issue.
Yeah, except the only problem with that, Kevin, is I kept holding the tweet. Can you do that? Up to the light, like your birthday card, looking for the money in there. I didn't see the word Chicago anywhere on the page.
Well, actually, I did send you some follow up on Chicago because Chicago has has started. Now they're just in early stages of it, but Chicago has started. With industry partners, which is really, really good, but Chicago has started down the path of creating. In their case, the early stages are focused on computer related stuff, networking, and building those skills through high school. But they're doing it with business partners, and they have the big ones involved. So they have, you know, your Microsofts and Ciscos and people like that, and they're all into it. But they have five schools. So Michelle Clark has Cisco. Corliss has Verizon Wireless. Motorola's in on CVS. and Lakeview has Microsoft, Southwest High School has IBM. So these are the way the programs work is that you have you tightly integrate the employer, the high school, potentially the college, although I can't tell what's going on with the college there. There's just not enough online
information. I think colleges are
interview
pretty
somebody, and they're building this pathway to get people so that they come out of high school basically ready to go to work in computer networking, and if they want to continue to pursue a degree, whether it be an associate's or a 4-year degree, that's okay. I think that's a good start. It's not manufacturing jobs, but I don't know that in the Chicago public school system that's it's not where I would start. It's absolutely where I'd start in where I live, but it's not where I what I'd start with there. I think technology is a good place. I think they can do the same thing with healthcare, and then maybe if they want to get into warehousing and manufacturing at some point, that would make sense. But that's really, you know, how you start preparing people, you know, for as you discussed, for the, you know, to basically be very employable. And the program's it's not just going to teach them the skill. They really get focused, and this is tied into the PTEC model, and PTEC's sort of this organization nationwide that's built the model for this. You right down to how to shake hands and look people in the eye is part of the curriculum. So they focus on employability skills as well, and that includes writing, doing research, problem solving, working in teams, all of those kinds of things.
I'm going to say, Kevin, that we don't have a minute, but I'm going to say virtually all of the advances in the Chicago public schools in the last 15 years have been towards competing with college prep. I mean, Gene Mirabito, formerly Gene Pearl, was talking about the amazing advancement in, like, in a horrible neighborhood of Lindblom Math and Science Academy, and how they're arguably one of the top 10 high schools in the state, in the middle of, like, the worst neighborhood in the city. And those kids, there's a big industry partner there, too. I don't know who it is. But they're way behind on Tilden Tech. They've gone for the high end more than they have the other end, which means I think that there's a lot of work to do. Kelly High School, they had the big vocational thing. Lane Tech is high-end stuff. You're right, that's all computers. I'm talking about the other end needs some work. So let's talk about that a little bit more on Friday. But SP Futures up 2.25. NASDAQ Futures up 11. We're creeping up a little bit here. Again, the big earnings this morning was Bank America. I've got it down 4 cents at 28.90. So nothing much going on there. Be right back, Mr. Russell Rhodes.
This self-directed trading is a lonely job. Online trading is not as easy as point and click.
No, it's not. Everyone, even professionals, need to share ideas and think out loud every now and then.
That's what I like about PTI Pro Direct. Their staff of former option floor traders really helps me choose the right strategy for trading option volatility and plan the time decay for my covered writing program.
Yep, nothing can replace years of trading experience to stop you from making that dumb trade and for saving a few bucks. We've all been there and done that.
Yeah, I have access to all that great trading advice and experience for just a penny a share for stocks, $1 for equity options, and $1 minimum a trade.
Our clients at PTI Pro Direct can call when they need a little help on a trade or just to talk about the market in general. We trade every day. We love this stuff.
That's what I like most about PTI Pro Direct. Cheap prices along with great advice from real floor traders. It's the best of both worlds.
Tell your friends. That's PTIProDirect.com. PTIProDirect.com.
Hello, this is Tom Howe, the Chief. Markets close to all-time highs, interest rates close to all-time lows. Investors are nervous, no return on cash balances, may have some invested a little too much for comfort, some not invested at all, earning very little. The market itself seems nervous. Experts say you should protect yourself. Experts say you should never sell. Experts say to get out right now, yet they are all experts. Then again, they do not know you or your situation. There are also some strange things going on at brokerage and investment advisor firms. Some solid clients and even some diligent brokers and investment advisors are being tossed out. Not big enough, don't charge enough, whatever the reason. This may leave you in a place where there literally is no one knowledgeable left to talk to if needed. PTI Securities and Futures is still here. Either here at our Chicago home office or in Arizona with Jan Neal, we still believe in servicing clients and providing a home for the right brokers or investment advisors the old-fashioned way. We are competitive, but we're also available to help. The last few years have seen a straight-up market without the need of a lot of investment help. What about this year or next year? If things change in the markets, do you really think you are ready? We also have a long history of designing and managing portfolios for people just like you. Might be good for you to check us out at PTISecurities.com. That's PTISecurities.com.
Is your business being challenged by the complexities surrounding healthcare reform or other matters related to human resources management? If so, then Cognos HR can help. A longtime friend and contributor to the Stocks and Jocks radio program, Cognos HR provides its clients with a perfect blend of strategic consulting and day-to-day HR management to drive overall improvement in business performance. Companies that join the Cognos HR family are better able to manage healthcare costs, enhance benefit offerings, and improve employee satisfaction by leveraging our access to Fortune 500 benefits. Our innovative onboarding and payroll technology, along with our constant attention to detail, enables us to provide the highest level of quality service to our clients. Now, your time and energy can be focused on generating business and increasing your bottom line. We'll take care of the rest. For more information, call us at 630-401-8810 or search us on the web at CognosHR.com. Cognos HR, innovation in human resources. Licensed in Illinois and Arizona.
Hi, this is John Neal from PTI Securities and Futures and a frequent contributor to the Stocks and Jocks radio program, as well as the branch manager of our Peoria, Arizona location. I hope you, like many of our listeners, have benefited from the outstanding market returns of the last several years. But have you recently become unsettled due to the worldwide geopolitical uncertainty, the increased volatility of commodities and currencies, or the looming Federal Reserve interest rate hikes? If you have answered yes to any of these questions, we can help you. Here at PTI, we offer a unique variety of income-producing securities as well as our proprietary hedging program to protect your assets. More information about these exciting programs and much more can be obtained from our website at PTISecurities.com or feel free to email me at john@PTISecurities.com. That's JOHN@PTISecurities.com.
Hear ye, hear ye! The Homer Broadcasting System is on the air!
Stocks, jocks,
Stocks and Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
You are out of control!
Right here, right now, right here.
Something happening here.
Well, welcome back to Stocks and Jacks. I'm Tom Allen. Matt Weber on the board, Mr. Jack Silverman as well. And we have Mr. Russell Rhodes with S&P Futures up 2. NASDAQ Futures up 10. As the market comes back on the rally mode after a slight dent yesterday from Trump's comments about tariffs. So he dented the rally, Trump did. What do you think of that, Russell? Your guy dented your rally.
Dented the rally?
Yes.
He doesn't even make it swoon.
Here's the headline. U.S. stocks set to regain momentum after Trump's trade comments dent historic rally.
Dent. That's as bad. You don't even buy the dips. You buy the dents now.
Yeah, the dents. It don't have to be a dip. It's a dent.
Yeah. I love it.
So what's up with you? What's good in Professor Land?
Good in Professor Land? Good in Professor Land. I was trying to figure out. This is my question of the day for you. How were we able to put a man on the moon 50 years ago, but we can't figure out where the stock market's going to be from day to day?
We put a man.
I like asking questions like the ones you ask.
We put a man on the moon with basically using slide rules.
I know. And now we have all this other great stuff, and from day to day, we've got no idea what's going to happen.
You know, when they built the Eisenhower Tunnel, do you or Jack even know where that is?
Is that the one underneath the post office?
No. God, I would never have dreamed it that way. No.
Well, that's the way I drive in when I come see you.
I take the
Eisenhower in, and then I go under a little tunnel, which is basically where they jacked up the post office. I'm officially, with that answer, I'm officially a Chicagoan.
I'd say you're officially.
I've been here for 30 years.
You're officially something, yes. I'm not so sure.
Yeah.
It's a. Anyway, the. Not asking you to be a real bluff or buff, either bluff or buff.
I should have known that because the question came from you right there.
Yeah. Well, there was. Yep. If you're going to talk about ways to get to the West Coast, there's like four or five normal, what shall we say, obvious ways to get to the West Coast. All right. I mean, it doesn't make them easy, but there was the way the original Transcontinental Railroad went there. There was a northern route, the Great Northern and the Northern Pacific. But as you know, they both come together when they go through the Sierra Nevada, so there's really only one way through there. Then there's the Southern Pacific, and then there's the Santa Fe. So there's two southern routes. Well, obviously, people always wanted to go through in the middle, you know, on the way to L.A., somewhere through Denver. So they tried to go up through Steamboat, but you had all these switchbacks. You know what a switchback is?
No.
It was so steep, you'd have to go up one side, then come back and swing the other way to make the turn in the mountains. It was all screwed up. Anyway.
Okay.
They tried getting through from Steamboat out to Salt Lake, and they never made it. They made it to Craig and basically gave up. So they said, you know, if we could just put a tunnel through the Continental Divide, like pretty much right near, the Eisenhower Tunnel is the tunnel for the Interstate 80. So I thought you would know what that meant, but just north of that is something called the Moffett Tunnel, which was the original railroad tunnel. That was way before the Eisenhower. The Eisenhower Tunnel, have you ever driven through there? It's unbelievable. I mean, we were talking about damn near a mile under, you know, through the mountain. Well, the Moffett Tunnel was in the, you know, in the early 1900s or late 1890s through there for a railroad. Now you're talking about when you still had steam, so you'd have huge fans at each end to make sure there's air in the thing and so forth. But of course you're going to start at both ends, right? And before you had satellite imagery, before you had computers, before you had anything, they started at both ends and met in the middle and were only off by like a half an inch.
That's awesome.
It's pretty awesome when you think about
it. Do that with the slide rule.
Yeah, with a slide rule. And people can, when you look at the computing capacity, when you watch Apollo 13, it all had to do with electrical power. Do we have enough power to fire this thing up? Well, now, I mean, electrical power is really not an issue, right? You probably got a solar panel outside the thing. And you're powering up while you're moving along, right? I mean, in those days they didn't have any of that stuff. I mean, they were what, like a couple of amps below crashing, right? Or I mean, then Apollo 13.
They came close.
Oh yeah.
They had about 5 seconds left, and it's really funny. All that stuff is so fascinating to watch right now, especially the way they're showing it in real time and everything. And I watched one of my kids is really into this, so I'm trying to support that and watch it with her. They were talking about as they were landing, they would monitor the different astronauts' heartbeats.
Yep.
And it's like Buzz Aldrin's never moved.
Yeah, all those guys.
He's the coolest guy in the world.
Well,
Neil Armstrong's is 30 beats higher than normal, and in the hundreds. Of course, he was the one trying to fly the thing.
Yeah.
And then they go, and Buzz Aldrin, you know, 77. It's like, oh, my God.
Well,
he's the guy you want on your side still.
Well, what do you think those guys, what do you think Chuck Yeager's was in the middle of a test? I mean, the same thing.
Oh, I'm sure. That's probably why they got to do what they got to do, or got chosen to do what they wanted.
I would say that must reading, you know, I used to say, for every American male, but that's wrong now because women do all the same stuff. I would say for everybody is you should read the right stuff.
Yeah,
it's absolutely must reading. What these people did. I mean, if you want to get a full shot of America and what human nature, what people can accomplish, you need to. Well, my suggestion is you do two things and spend a lot of time at both. By the way. You got to go to the Wright-Patterson Museum in Dayton, which has the absolute history of aviation from like day one, the first crash, the first this, the first that, from the Wright brothers on through. And also the Auburn Duesenberg Cord Museum in Auburn, Indiana. Because when you look at that one and you look at the amount of where automobiles were in like 1910 and where they were in 1930, and the incredible advancement and the amount of people involved in it and what competition did. It basically went from a Model T putting along at 5 miles an hour to cars that were doing like 110, front wheel drive, you name it, all in 20 years. It's absolutely incredible. And you look at airplanes, and you went from, 1912 was Kitty Hawk, right? You had a 1933. You had planes that are going to 30,000 feet, going 300 miles an hour. Maybe.
Oh yeah.
I mean, it is absolutely incredible the advancement that people can make once they get on a subject. And even the advancements in goggles, the advancements in helmets, the advancements in, I mean, you name it, leather jackets, so people could be warm up there at 30,000. I mean, everything had to come along with it. I mean, when you look at those kinds of things, and you look what people can do when they work together and move forward, and you look at the petty crap that we're arguing about now, you almost get sick about it. You almost get sick about it.
I kind of had the exact same thought, especially they were showing everybody that had camped out just to watch the rocket take off to go to the moon, and it was a broad mix of people out there. You know what I mean? I mean, it was you didn't have anybody upset because the person that parked next to them didn't look like them, or
right.
had the wrong you know or had the wrong political sticker on the back of their car.
Well, when John Kennedy
less about that stuff.
And, I remember the speech. You're a little too young, but when he said we not I, not me, mm-hmm. not we are going to put an astronaut on the moon by the end of this decade.
Yeah.
We. So when that guy landed, he landed there for all of us. We don't feel that way now. We should.
No, we don't. And it's very unfortunate, you know. I mean, you and I, we're on opposite ends of the spectrum, so I have to call in now. We can't be in the same room anymore.
Oh, yeah. I understand.
Yeah, it's been very difficult.
But it screws you out of your iced coffee. So,
yeah, I've got to make my own here at home. God knows nobody else is doing it.
But I was 17 years old, and I felt like that was my step.
Yeah. I was two, but...
Oh, well, and you probably were.
Yeah, I was two. Yeah.
So, I mean, it was... And when McDivitt, one of the astronauts, mm-hmm. came to work for Pullman, I was like, he's a regular guy. he's mm-hmm. I can go say hello to the guy. and he yeah. was one of the, he wasn't, I don't know if he was a moon guy, but was he an Apollo guy? He was something. I forget. But I'm sitting there.
Was he a, you know, do you know what the Mole project was?
No, I don't. Maybe, or do
there
I?
Were actually, no, there were actually two space programs. There was the one to get to the moon and one to put basically a space station that would go up and come down periodically up so we could watch the Russians. The Mole project. They actually had two sets of astronauts that were selected.
Well, the shuttle...
It was before the shuttle. This was in the...
No, yeah, but when you say before the shuttle, I took a class in 1974 at Notre Dame in Space mm-hmm. Tech and Society. Notre Dame has a... I don't know if Memphis does, but Notre Dame has a huge ROTC program.
Okay.
More, I mean, it's not as big as, you know, Texas A&M or something, but it's, they've got everybody
yeah.
there. I mean, they've got the Army, Navy, Air Force. They're all there. And they have a big aerospace engineering thing for a school that size. And, so they've got these guys teaching, right? And so they had this course they did, and, it was supposed to be basically an easy course for seniors. Almost like a PR course in aerospace, right?
Mm-hmm.
And well, of course, everybody found out about it, you know. So,
yeah.
So there's like 300 people in the class, and I'm one of the idiots who actually found it absolutely fascinating. I mean, mm-hmm. one of the teachers had been the head of NASA, so I mean, there's 300 kids in the class, and there's 30 of them that actually show up, right? And I'm one of the 30.
Yeah,
I never missed it.
Yeah.
And to this day, I still have the notes. And they were talking about the shuttle, the design of the shuttle back then in 1974,
mm-hmm.
and how they'd already made the change. It was supposed to have been two vehicles, one big honking
yep.
vehicle that flew up to like 50,000 feet, and then dropped the shuttle off essentially to go the rest of the way, and that would fly down, and then the shuttle would fly down.
Mm-hmm.
And then they decided no, we couldn't do that; it was too expensive. They went with those solid fuel rides. They already made a decision in 1974. And it wasn't a new decision. It was probably made in 73 or 71. And these guys were all pissed off about it. They said, it's much more dangerous. Duh. Right? How many people?
Yeah, we found that out.
We found that out.
Yeah.
And it's in the end, it'll cost more, which I'm sure it probably did. And they talked about the DC-10s, the problem with the DC-10s blowing up, or not blowing up, but the cargo doors blowing out. So, I mean, these guys were right on all this stuff. But anyway, you really felt, I mean, the space station, all that stuff, that was all in the works from the 60s, all the spy part of it, I think.
Yeah. Well, that's what the MOL is. It's the Manned Orbiting Laboratory, but what it really was the thing to fly around and take pictures of what was going on in Russia.
Well, we're good at that.
They canceled it in the late 60s when, you know, everybody was focused on the Apollo program. Also, I think the need to see what was going on in the Soviet Union wasn't as great as we thought it was in the early 60s. But several of the people that were picked for that, or not several, but a handful of the people that were astronauts that got shuttled off into the secret program ended up working on the space shuttle or flying the space shuttle. Like these guys in their mid-40s had been,
you know, I often wonder where those guys all came from.
A lot of them came. It's the thing that not a lot of people talk about. And one of the other things we had three of the Apollo astronauts die on the ground. They actually lost one of the manned orbiting laboratory astronauts during a test on the ground, and he was actually African American. He would have been the first African American in space if he had been around. They actually they basically selected two different groups. They did one press conference with this secret group, and then you never heard of them again.
most of the research and the shuttle landing stuff came from the test pilot guys. The what was the other mm-hmm. was Chuck Yeager, and who was the other guy? And there was a guy who was he was Air Force, and there was those two guys would constantly be going Mach 1, Mach 2. Obviously, Chuck Yeager is the guy who first guy who broke the speed of sound, nobody knew what a sonic boom was. So when the sonic
found out.
Well, but they assumed he blew up
when the thing went off. I didn't know that.
Yeah, they absolutely assumed that he must have blown up. So what happened is they had these little stub-nosed little things, and they drop them out of the belly of a B-29, much like the shuttle was supposed to be. And they'd put on the gas, and the thing would immediately, it was hydrogen and something fuels, it was like a little rocket. And these guys would jam it, and they when they got to the speed of sound, finally Chuck Yeager broke through. But the thing was, then they were out of gas. So they would they would land dead stick.
Yeah.
And, they're out at Edwards Air Force Base, which gave you some room, but still, landing dead stick is a feat. I've never been a pilot, but, I mean, you're talking about no power. So if you manage to screw it up, you can't, you know. So that's when they decided they could have a shuttle and actually land the damn thing dead stick. Cause the thing has no power coming in. So landing it is quite a feat. Can you imagine? I mean, there are probably some guys that could do it. Imagine having a 767 up in the air and just turning the engines off and say, okay, there's O'Hara, go to it. Mm-hmm. It's sort of like what's his name did in the river. But that was dead stick, right? He had no power.
Yeah.
But he wasn't about he couldn't make, but he probably was going to make a shot at an airport if he could have got there. You know, he'd rather land at an airport but guys can do that. And, not this guy, but some guys, but yeah, when you do get the feeling, Russell, Kevin and I were just talking about it, when you argue so much that we're doing in Congress and the president back and forth, not only is it fatiguing, but you've wasted a day you could have been doing something else.
Exactly. You know, it's I've grown up from this, but at one point I was, you know, I would let the smallest things at work and the most irritating people occupy way too much of my mind, and I've finally grown out of that. But it seems like a good portion of the people in our government have not grown out of that. And I think that some of it, I think it's always gone on. If you read, you know, if you read history, if you read, you know, the first 10 presidential elections, they were saying some nasty stuff
other.
But after the election was over, they got in there and they worked together. You know
what?
I mean, everybody that was in Lincoln's cabinet was somebody that he had run against at one point.
He brought
them all in. I mean, and they accomplished some pretty good stuff.
I actually have three questions for the professor this morning. First one's an easy one. Well, it might not be easy. Gilligan's Island. You're the professor. Ginger or Marianne?
The other professor.
So if you were him, Ginger or Marianne, who's your...
Oh, Ginger or Marianne. Oh, definitely Marianne. Ginger's out of my league.
I would have been Marianne here, too.
I think everybody says Marianne.
A lot of people like the feisty girl next door, you know?
Yeah, you know? So
anyway, the other two, though, are somewhat serious. actually, that's serious, too. I mean, you know, Ginger, yeah. Ginger'd been out of luck.
That's
what
a
can
very
I tell
serious
you?
Question.
Yeah. If this thing with Powell, I was mentioning with Kevin earlier, but you are the economics professor, Trump versus mm-hmm. Powell. Trump has a point, and not just on the top of his head, but he is, as my mother used to say, he has a point in that the dollar thing is a tad troubling. But on the other hand, I don't see how the solution is to follow Draghi down what I consider to be an economic rat hole. I don't know what the solution there is. Do you?
I think if you're going to be the reserve currency for the world, you have to be above playing those games. And, you know, other currencies have come along and decided we're going to try to be the reserve currency. You know, the Iranians decided they were only going to get paid for oil in euros, and I think that was them trying to nudge that one in becoming the reserve currency. The Chinese would love for their currency to be the reserve currency for the world. I believe the reason that the dollar is because it's above all of that stuff.
I would agree.
It's supposed to be above all of that stuff. And if you start to play, and let's just assume that there's some games that are being played, and some of it's market forces. But if you start playing those games, you're going to erode some of the confidence in the dollar. I think one of the things that you know, most people believe is that the dollar is kind of above reproach as far as being manipulated. Other currencies, they have the ability to do so. Also, I think our economy is so freaking large that you can't do something like that without having some negative repercussions throughout the whole global economic system.
Well, you really don't want to throw...
I think that's one we've got to just not... I don't think that's one you want to touch at all.
Well, I mean,
my first concern when I heard that one was you're going to ruin the confidence there, man, and you don't want to do that.
Well, I think it's, from what I read, the president is obviously heading that way. His problem with Powell now is the dollar. It's not interest rate per se.
Yeah.
But I don't... I'm with you. I don't think you can go there. The economy is way too big to essentially mess with the economy to try and deal with a trade issue.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't think even if we tried that we would really be able to do some of the things that smaller economies are able to do with respect to their currency if they really can push them around. But just indicating that we might be trying to do so publicly creates a bigger problem, because if people stop having confidence in you know, our currency, they're going to look to something else to be the main currency for the rest of the world, and we don't want that. You know, we'd rather suffer some smaller consequences with other people being able to push the exchange rates around a little bit and still have the main, you know, have the main medium exchange in the world than maybe get some short-term gain from manipulating it around some.
Are you concerned here that your fellow conservative was found out? Cubs co-owner Todd Ricketts faces big property tax hike, even bigger bill for back taxes after Tribune review.
Am I concerned about that? Couldn't you replace his name with the current governor?
Yeah, oh yeah.
Not really. And I'm not a Cubs guy, you know that. And I've never really been much of a Ricketts fan. So, yeah. And finally, you know, Republicans in the state of Illinois are Democrats where I came from.
Pretty much. Well, I mean, there's always the same ilk. Plus, there's always a flip side to this. And much as the thought of Pritzker's got all the money in the world pulling toilets out of the place. But I tell you what.
Yeah,
the idea of having to pay that kind of a tax bill when you're not even living in the damn place—that's a lot of dough for anybody, even if you've got a lot of dough. I mean, we're not. I mean, any way anybody could shave a tax, I know when Audrey's been selling some places on far south side, and not in the city, but in the suburbs. There's people, if you go buy a home in Flossmoor now, granted the property values are diminished, you know, whatever, for whatever, a lot of reasons, but you can buy a palace for, you know, 200 grand, and your taxes are gonna be 40. Or 35. Yeah. I mean, she sold somebody a place for $56,000 and the taxes are like six. Or 5,500 or something. I'm like, hey, come on.
It's ridiculous here. I'm in the process of selling my dad's house, and his house will go for somewhere around 190 to 200 in Memphis, and his property taxes are $2,400 a year.
Yeah, I mean, if I could, the house she sold in, I'm going to say it's in Park Forest. I mean, if I could advise that person while you redo this place that's almost unlivable, hence the $56,000. If you can pull the toilet out while the 6 months that you're rehabbing it and cut that tax by a grand, I'd advise it in a nanosecond.
Well, especially if you're going to swap it out.
Yeah. Yeah. What's the difference?
It's funny because the place that I live now, the place that I'm sitting in right now, in Clarendon Hills, was empty for 2 years. We bought a foreclosure that the construction guy actually built for himself. And since nobody protested the property taxes and nobody was paying on it, our property taxes were about 30% higher than the neighbors on each side, one of which has a much nicer house than I do. And it really was, Illinois has just become a sport that you have to protest your taxes every year.
When I was a Ute, do you say you?
Uh-huh.
We lived in Evergreen Park, 102nd place, in the Southtown Economist, or the Suburban Economist, whichever one you got. Southtown was the city, Suburban was the other one. Once a year, they would come out with a supplement, and in the supplement, in your area, were every single address and every single tax assessment. So you could actually look the thing up, and we were 2920, and in the tax, you know, whatever it was, $800, what the hell it was back in those days. And the guy next door would be 850, and you'd say, okay, he's got a finished basement, I don't. Or the guy on the other side would be 850, 900, he's got a garage, we didn't. So you could actually police your own thing, because it was just right there, they sent it to you. Now, you can still get this stuff. Where you find it, I don't know. I'm sure it's available someplace. I mean, it's got to be public record, but they used to actually hand it to you and say, here, check your own stuff, right? Basically, SP futures up 2, NASDAQ futures down up 11. I don't think we want to do anything easy anymore, even though we have the internet. But it wasn't as easy as getting it dropped on your doorstep. Be right back, Stacks and Jacks.
How much confidence do you have that your investments will make you wealthy? Do you truly know the odds? Welcome to Luckbox, the control freak's guide to life, money, and probability. Luckbox shows you how to gauge the likelihood of success before you commit to an investment or any other decision. And Luckbox is free for 1 year at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Each new issue dives deep into the current investing climate, separates the signal from the noise with relevant trade ideas, and equips you with cutting-edge tactics you don't already know. Luckbox is the essential magazine for proactive investors who are hell-bent on pursuing life, luxury, and happiness through sports, fitness, travel, food, spirits, music, and a whole lot more. Smart investors don't bet on possibilities, they play the probabilities. Luckbox is $7.99 on newsstands, but you can subscribe for 10 free digital issues at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Don't rely on luck. Get Luckbox at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks.
Hello, this is Tom Howell, the Chief. We've talked a lot on the show about risk and suitability, about how your portfolio should match your age, income, and risk appetite. It's been hard for investors to maintain that suitability in the last several years due to a Fed strategy that has driven interest rates to virtually zero. You may have even heard that the Fed was trying to drive conservative investors to a riskier portfolio on purpose, for whatever reason. I'm sure you're aware of investors that took some increased risk, such as longer-term fixed income securities, and are now unhappy with that choice. PTI, we've always stressed total portfolio risk awareness and tried to minimize chasing returns in a tough environment. Well, now it looks like maybe interest rates are moving more towards historical levels. Everyone needs to be aware of what that continued movement might do to your portfolio, both good and bad. We also have a stock market that seems to have stalled, at least for the short term.
I think it's time for everyone to take a serious look at their goals, their risks, and their portfolios. Do they match? If not, we can help. We have a signature protected index program. We have ways to hedge against interest risk. We can make that portfolio right for you again. Go to PTIsecurities.com or call us right now. The market can change very rapidly. That's PTIsecurities.com.
This self-directed trading is a lonely job. Online trading is not as easy as point and click.
No, it's not. Everyone, even professionals, need to share ideas and think out loud every now and then.
That's what I like about PTI Pro Direct. Their staff of former option floor traders really helps me choose the right strategy for trading option volatility and plan the time decay for my covered writing program.
Yep, nothing can replace years of trading experience to stop you from making that dumb trade and for saving a few bucks. We've all been there and done that.
Yeah, I have access to all that great trading advice and experience for just a penny a share for stocks, $1 for equity options, and $1 minimum a trade.
Our clients at PTI ProDirect can call when they need a little help on a trade or just to talk about the market in general. We trade every day. We love this stuff.
That's what I like most about PTI ProDirect. Cheap prices along with great advice from real floor traders. It's the best of both worlds.
Tell your friends. That's PTIProDirect.com. PTIProDirect.com.
Are you one of the millions of people who suffer with pain? Do you wake up in the morning with stiffness in the lower back or neck? Why are you using medication to cover up the symptoms without treating the actual cause? Painkillers, muscle relaxants, and anti-inflammatories are not the answer. At ChiroMed, physicians are trained to detect the cause of your symptoms and to correct the underlying problem. If you're ready to listen to common sense and do what it takes to make changes in your body that can affect your health for the rest of your life, give ChiroMed a call and set up a complimentary consultation. They are located in Orland Park and can be reached at 708-403-2727. 20,000 patients over 22 years have been treated at ChiroMed, and over 90% of them have had positive results without medication or expensive surgery. Isn't it time you did something good for your body too? Give ChiroMed a call. 708-403-2727. That's 708-403-2727. Let's get you pain-free and living again.
Stocks, jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Here, right now. Right here, right now.
Well, welcome back to Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tom Howie, Mr. Russell Rhodes. We have Mr. Matt Weber on the board, with Mr. Jack Silverman. S&P futures down 75 cents now, so not much bouncing around the flat line. It's the first time we've seen them down. NASDAQ futures up 175. We got the Dow futures, as soon as I get them here, they're up 15. We've got, looks like Bank of America came out, earnings are down 9 cents. So not much going on the bank thing. They've all beat. And yet, I think only one was up, J.P. Morgan. The rest of the Citigroup was down a little bit, and banks down a real little bit. So nothing much going on there. Over in Europe, we've got the DAX down 18.2%, FTSE down 15.2%, CAC around down 9.2%. So talk about snooze to the downside over there. Nikkei down 66.3%, Shanghai down 6.2%, Hang Seng down 26.1%. Snooze to the downside there as well. Oil showing up a whole percent, 61 cents, but still, we were 60 bucks Monday, I think, and here we are Wednesday at 58.23, so a little bit of a dead cat bounce there, as they used to say on the trading floor. Brent up 81 cents, 65.16, RBOB 190, we've got gold is down 5 bucks, 14.05, silver up 2 cents, 15.70, not much going on there. What do you guys got for us, Trailing Weather Sports?
35 minutes past the hour. Good morning once again to everyone out there. The Sports Weather Traffic Update is brought to you by Luckbox Magazine. The Guide to Money and Probability is available on newsstands for $7.99 per issue. And Stocks and Jocks listeners receive a free digital subscription. Just go to luckboxmagazine.com/jocks and sign up for that today. No strings attached, no credit card needed. You just sign up and you get a free digital subscription. It's pretty great. Off to a decent start on the area expressways, but we do have a crash involving a motorcycle coming inbound on the Bishop Ford. It's been moved to the right shoulder just before 130th Street.
The motorcycle or the body?
Well, I hope it's, I don't know. I assume the body is out of there, but hopefully everyone's okay. But traffic is navigating around that at 130th on the inbound side, so keep that in mind. No issues on the Ryan. Traffic building on the Stevenson, but no accidents to report. We do have a rollover crash, though, 95th Street eastbound at the Tri-State Tollway. And so crews are on that. That's a serious issue as well. So a rollover crash at 95th in the Tri-State there.
No issues coming in on the Eisenhower, though traffic is building steadily. Same could be said for the Kennedy and Edens in both directions, but no accidents or issues to report. Weather today, it's going to be sort of our last nice day before a heat wave comes in tomorrow, and then we approach triple digits on Friday and Saturday. But today, very nice, partly cloudy skies, a high of 83. Right now it's mostly clear and 77 degrees downtown. For our Phoenix listeners, sunshine with a high of 108 today. Right now it's clear and 92. In sports, Cubs walked it off last night in the 10th. Kyle Schwarber with an opposite field home run that landed in the basket as they topped the Reds 4-3. Cubs were down 3-0 in that one and then shut down the Reds for 9 straight innings while the offense chipped away and ended up winning that ball game. They'll play the rubber match today at Wrigley. White Sox were blown out by the Royals in Kansas City 11-0, and Eloy Jimenez left that game with a sore elbow. He flew back to Chicago for test results. But manager Rick Renteria said he'll likely be put on the injured list, so they're expecting that to be a relatively serious injury. Lastly, the Diamondbacks took care of the Rangers, no problem in Texas, 9-2. Chief.
I think the Cubs, I'm after ranting and raving for a while about Schwarber and Rizzo not using the shift, all of a sudden this week, both those guys look like new guys. They're playing great.
It makes you wonder if that was discussed over the All-Star break. I know Madden doesn't like to do a lot of meetings, but he typically does one around the All-Star break heading into it. And I mean, that might have been something. You know, hey, these
maybe guys, they actually took a couple days off, and then a couple days they worked on it.
Yeah, like these guys are overshifting a few of our guys big time. And if you're leading off an inning, especially, why not, you know, take a shot at laying down a bunt or slapping it the other way and starting a big inning for us. Both of them have been doing that.
Plus, the home run here last night was to right center, right?
Schwarber?
Yeah.
No, he hit it opposite field, left center.
Well, I'm sorry. Opposite field, I meant.
Yeah.
The opposite field for me would be right center.
Yes.
You would be right center. Him would be left center.
Yeah, his last two home runs, because he homered the day before as well, was also in the left field bleachers.
Russell, couple of big questions here for Russell. We're putting him through his paces today. I hope he has like two or three iced coffees.
You're still mad at me about being on vacation last week and forgetting to tell you.
You're on vacation perpetually, it seems to me.
Yeah. So I was up in Lake Geneva. We got on the boat and went and checked out the governor's house up there, governor of Illinois' house up there.
Did you see
all the other Illinois governors that are in Wisconsin are in jail. He's the only one that, you know, goes up there and hangs out. He's got 110,000. He's got the most expensive speedboat on the lake that was carved out of a single giant log that was harvested from Brazil and brought up specifically for him.
Did you see any hacker crafts?
Is that true?
Yeah, it actually is. It's a story up there. It wasn't a story down here. He got busted speeding on his boat, so everybody described which boat was his and everything, and that's why we had to go see where his house was while I was there.
I think I'm the last.
So he didn't get busted. So, you know what? I'm not going to, because the story was told to me as an exaggeration, and then I read it. He was doing 41 when the speed limit was 15. The speed limit on the lake drops from 35 to 15 when the sun goes down, and it was like right at dusk, so he got a warning for going too fast on the lake, but his boat is a very, very nice piece of machinery that honestly was carved out of a giant log.
Do they have any hacker crafts up there?
Do they have hover crafts up there? No.
No.
Not that I've seen.
Hacker crafts.
What's a hacker craft?
How can a man like you not know what a hacker craft is? It's a super high-end wooden boat that they still...
Yeah, I think they do. I'm not much of a boat guy, and the one that I will drive around periodically is perfect. And the perfect boat is somebody else's boat.
Oh yeah.
So I don't know that much about them.
I think I'm the last Chicago resident in you know, maybe ever, that's never been on Lake Geneva.
I've never been at it.
We will bring you up next year.
I've never been at it.
You haven't?
I've driven around it enough times. I've never been at it.
Once you're a respectable and married guy, you can come along.
How has Chief never been on it?
He's not married. He's not respectable.
Well, I haven't taken Chief up there.
No, see?
Interesting.
Anyway, two things.
Yes.
Let me throw this, since one of the listeners was nice enough to send this in. These are graphs that you look at and you wonder, what the bleep over? It's a Dow gold ratio, relative value indicator. Ounces of gold required to buy one unit of the Dow Jones. And you look at these things and you wonder what would that have to do with the price of rice? But it is fascinating. The 117 year average is the Dow is 107, is 11 times higher, maybe that 12, call it, 12 times higher than the price of gold. All right. And it, and it spiked above that in, let's say 1929, which is sort of an interesting year.
Yeah.
It spiked above it in 1968, the peak. It was above it through all the 60s and 70s when basically we came off the Bretton Woods and hit the high point here in 1968. And as you might imagine, which is even more bizarre because now we see gold go up and interest rates go down. It reached the all-time low at 35 to 1. I'm sorry, 1 to 3 in 1980, where the Dow was damn near the same price as gold.
Yeah.
And, where I can remember when I started in 1980, the Dow was like 800 or something. And then in 2000 was the tippy top. And look, gee, what happened in 2000? And now we're right back up to scooting up. We're almost as high as the 1968 high, way above the 1929 high. Pushing on towards the 2000 high. I'm not going to say you should trade on that. I'm not going to for me and my people, but it is interesting.
I think if you tried to short the market when that one looks like it's out of control, it might be one of those cases where you have trouble staying solvent until the trade works out for you.
That's exactly right.
Yeah. But I've seen that stat before. I hadn't seen it in a long time. I'd kind of forgotten about it. I don't think people give gold as much love as they used to.
No.
But it's coming back. A lot of the gold option activity over at the guys across the street at the CME Group, they did a record average daily volume back in June.
It's percolating, for
the more active option traders, not the ones that do the legitimate uses like you do, when you get an increase in volatility, usually the increase in volatility for like the stock market is because we've got a sell off in the stock market. When you're talking about commodities, if you're talking about oil or gold, you get a vol spike when you get a breakout to the upside or to the downside. So, and we got the breakout to the upside. In fact, I think June was the widest range that we'd had in over 2 or 3 years. So it's seeing a resurgence, and it's very possible that ratio is going to come down because gold rallies a little bit more than the stock market sells off.
Well, I've got a, as everybody knows who listens and kind of pays attention, I've got a huge position for my clients in the GDX, which is the Gold Miners Index, mainly because I was always concerned about what's going on with the dollar and these other currencies, and everything's a relation to anything else. I mean, I was saying earlier in the show that I only have a couple of themes, really, Russ. Most people can't figure out what those are. The themes are, one is everything depends on everything else. If you hear one story today, just think about it. A week from now, you're gonna hear a story that appears to be totally separate, yet the two of them are really together. And the other thing is, I mean, when you talk about values, and this is not something you normally think of from Notre Dame or Memphis, is everything is in relation to whatever. It's sort of like it's very much like physics. Okay, I'm moving this way in relation to what? Yes, but is the other guy moving too? Because I might be moving twice as fast in relation to him, even though I'm only one times as fast to you who thinks you're steady. But by the way, the Earth's moving, the galaxy's moving, everybody's moving. So it's all in relation to something else, right? So, when you look at the gold, it has to do with gold is a fixed amount of something. There's only so much you're mining, so much you have. It has some value. Doesn't help you out if you're sick. Doesn't help you out to go buy a loaf of bread. But it has some fixed value that people have thought it had forever. Either it's industrial value or whatever it is. And so if you double the amount of dollars and you don't double the amount of something else, be it automobiles, be it, pounds of sugar, whatever it is, you would think that the other stuff would now be worth
twice as many dollars, not because it became more valuable, because the dollar went less. So, I mean, you can have a day where gold is down in terms of dollars, but it actually is up in terms of euros or yen. And it's hard, necessarily to think like that. It could drive you nuts. But I try every once in a while to get the listeners to think at least a little bit that way. This is going up in relation to what? Well, it's going up in relation to this, but maybe not to that. You know, which, I mean, again, that can drive you squirrely if you take it to the extreme, but you at least have to sort of know that it's kind of going on. And that yes, the Dow is in relation to something. Well, of course, we keep changing stocks in the Dow, which obviously affects this chart, right? I mean, again, that's part of an issue. Because whenever these have these indexes, you kick some stocks out and kick some back in. So the same stocks you're talking about aren't the ones in 29 or the ones in 2000.
Yeah.
So it's a flaw right out of the gate with the argument, correct? And I'm popping holes in my own argument here. They're not the same stocks. That's one problem, correct? You're talking about an average.
I was thinking that, but I wasn't going to pop that hole in your argument.
Well, I'm out
to punch. Because they're different stocks, but they're representative of what the economy is like now compared to what the economy was like then. You can make an argument both sides on that one.
Well, I think that you know this as a professor. You should always pop the holes in your own argument before somebody does it for you.
Yep.
Because guess what? Virtually every argument's got a hole in it, right? At least.
At least one.
At least one. Hey, the other question I've had, a bunch of discussions now this week being Wednesday. And I even had a discussion last night with one of my buddies from the Fed. I for one, and you can tell me, you give me a C paper or a hook, as they used to say, or an F. I have a problem, and I just have a real serious problem with the banks getting out of the banking business. I think they've been given a franchise. They're given the FDIC. The idea to me that we're going down this Chinese road, that if you're going to get a loan from your plumbing truck, that you're going to go online and get it from LendingTree or somebody like that, and not go to the local bank with all these advantages, government insurance, you name it, free money, you name it, I think is abominable. I mean, not on a small scale, but on a large scale. Why would the Fed in the long run ever want that to happen and essentially get stuff out of the places that have all the advantages to do those things? Am I going nuts here, or I just not worry about it? It'll come back one of these days on its own, or what? But I think the lack of concern there is a problem.
I think, yeah, it's definitely a problem. I'm almost speechless on that one.
The last thing I want is for somebody to regulate LendingTree out of business. The idea that people are competitive and so forth is terrific, but you would think at some point LendingTree would form a bank with all those advantages.
Yeah. No, absolutely.
And yet they don't seem to want any part of...
And that's actually... Well, the thing is, it's easier to operate on the peripheral of the financial system than it is to get involved in all the getting your own personal regulator when you enter the true banking system.
Well, but no matter who you are, though,
and it's one of the competitive advantages that they have. They have a lower regulatory cost.
Okay, but what I'm saying is, if you're, I don't care if you're the rightest of the right, or if you're Elizabeth Warren, I don't care if you're right or you're left. When you see the regulatory burden so high that people that are supposed to be in the business leave it and other people take it up, everybody, even she, should recognize that and say something's wrong here.
That's not going to happen. And the reason I know you didn't do this, but I did this. I actually spent all day listened to it twice. The hearing on Facebook's considered entry into the crypto market. And every single one of those guys was, how are we going to regulate this from both sides? Their thinking is Facebook's going to cause another 2008 unless we put them under a microscope all the time.
No, I mean, I don't think that's,
I'm paraphrasing everything I heard, but I heard that multiple times yesterday.
But the thinking is very, in one man's opinion, Russell, is very flawed. If you keep screwing up what you're doing, and you and you make it so nobody has any kind of privacy, nobody has anything, people are going to go elsewhere. And now,
that's actually what leads to the crashes.
Well, but
just
I mean,
about every single crash that we've had is because it's not people operating within the system; it's people on the periphery or the shadow banking or whatever. It was people buying stocks on margin in storefronts in New York in 1929. You know, it's a lot of this a lot of people doing end arounds on the markets. You know, people lending, mortgage companies lending money to people who had no ability whatsoever to ever pay it back, and you know, people getting mortgages from companies that are not banks. That's where the crashes come from.
If
you overregulate something, you're going to have people that are going to try to figure out how to operate outside of.
I would say the normal
system.
I'm going to push back on you on that one, even though you and I have been agreeing all day. Maybe we have to push back just because I should at least once, you know, type of thing. Everybody keeps trying to blame the poor guy who got the mortgage that he shouldn't have. How about the off balance sheet? What do you want to call it? Accumulator group from Bear Stearns or a bank, that was taking these, credit default swaps and so forth. Not so much those things, but the collateralized debt obligations. Taking those off balance sheets. How the hell can a regulator allow a bank to take something off a balance sheet? How good of a regulator are you?
Not very good whatsoever, but if it's not within your, you know, the regulators have a set of rules and they're not going to think outside of that rule box very often.
But I'm saying you're not, yep.
If you would just make, I don't know, if there was a happy balance if there was an incentive instead of a stick, if there was a carrot to make you come into the normal banking environment, if you're going to do something like what Facebook is doing, instead of setting it up over in Switzerland, that might be a better approach than beating the crap out of the guy in a hearing for 2.5 hours and, you know, blaming everything from, you know, Trump being president to people losing their whole life savings because people got to their information through Facebook. That's just an extreme on the other side.
How about
what the government should be doing?
How about if the two-headed monster, Chief and Russell, walked into the Fed and walked into the regulators, got them all in a big room and said, "Look, I'll go first because I get to host, right? Even though it wouldn't be a show, and you could of course disagree with me. Here's your job, guys." Your job is not to stand over somebody's shoulder on a friggin' car loan. People have known how to do car loans forever. It's not up to you to have more and more regulations on a mortgage loan. People have given mortgage loans for 100 years. We don't need you to say you can't write a check out. We don't need you to tell me you can't bring a $100 bill in case you're off by $50. I don't need those kinds of regulations. All you're doing is beating up on stuff that we already know about. That'll never cause a crisis again, okay? Because people have learned to watch on their own. What I want you to do is anticipate where the next crisis is going to come from and look ahead and find out that there's $6 or there's $35 worth of leverage on every friggin' mortgage. That's your job because no individual could know that except you guys. I want you to stop the next crisis, not the last one.
That they're always going to be regulating for the previous crisis.
Well, but to a certain extent, yeah.
This is, you know, sometimes I think those of us in our industry prop ourselves up as, you know, we're some kind of rocket scientists or something like that, and we're really not. We're just very focused. I mean, like one of your commercials says, you guys love this stuff, and you're focused on it all the time. I'm focused on it all the time, so I, you know, have a little bit more insight than the average person. Regulators are not focused on it all the time. They're not thinking about it on the weekend. You're thinking about it on the weekend.
But people, when my parents bought a house in 1958...
And that's the problem, is you've got, I don't know, maybe, you know what, if you think about our industry, like every year, the 9-inning baseball game, I think we're playing. I think we're almost playing a couple of them without umpires.
Well, I mean, but
a couple of those innings.
But look, I mean, look at the.
We're doing a lot more than they are.
But Russell, we got to look at a closing. I mean, look, people buy a house. Okay, there's a loan involved. So here's the story. You need several things. You need some insurance in case there's a fire and so forth. You need people to have a little bit of money, whatever it's 10%, 15, 20, whatever it is, 8%. You need people to have some skin in the game, have to save up for it, have equity in the game. The rest of it's going to be a loan. There's going to be insurance. And there needs to be some idea that the value of what you're giving the loan on, that the collateral, which would be the house, is good collateral, and that the house at 200 grand is worth 200 grand. And if everybody got run over by a bus tomorrow, the bank could sell it at least for the 200 minus the 10% somebody's putting down easily. And this is not rocket science. This was done in the 50s. I mean, and all of a sudden you've got, oh God, what if you take a check at this closing? Who cares? Everything's got to be a wire transfer. Every single real estate person I know says that at least one occasion, since the rule came down that everything had to be a wire transfer, they know of at least one closing where people's money got stolen during a wire. Name me a person who brought a cashier's check from the bank that ever got the thing stolen. And yet,
they may have dropped it and lost it somewhere.
Yeah, but now this is their rule, and they're sticking to it. The bureaucrats have no ability, it seems like, for somebody the office at the top of the steps to say, you know what, this isn't working out so hot. Let's go back to the old way. We can't ever do that, right? We can never go back to say, I don't have a problem with people trying anything, but there needs to be an end date on it. After 2 years, is it working? Are less people stealing by a wire transfer and then you buy a check? If the answer is no, go back. But we can't do that. Oh, no, it's always got to be a wire transfer now. Well, why? Because somebody said so. Who the hell is somebody?
Unwinding any rule that gets put in place is twice
brutal.
As hard. Twice as hard. 10 times as hard.
Russell, thank you, buddy. We got a dash. We'll talk next week. SP Futures down a whole 50 cents. NASDAQ Futures up 375. Looks like a snorer. Be back tomorrow. I'll tell you all about it.
What did we learn, Palmer?
I don't know, sir.
I don't know either. I guess we learned not to do it again.
Stocks and Jocks is brought to you by PTI Securities and Futures. Go to ptisecurities.com. PTI Pro Direct. Trade for as low as a penny per share and a dollar per option contract. Learn more at ptiprodirect.com. Nadex. Offering an intuitive way to trade the financial markets. Visit nadex.com. Home Source Realty. Call Audrey Johnson at 708-349-3456. Hamzy Analytics. Listen to Fari Hamzy every other Thursday and visit HamzyAnalytics.com. ChiroMed. Back or neck pain? Schedule a complimentary consultation by calling 708-403-2727. DAX Research. Tune in for David Andelman's technical analysis on Mondays and Thursdays and call 1-800-821-4968.